April 13th, 2008, it's the Watt from Pedro Show.
talking about red Lebanese. Well, a dirty room, silver coke spoon, give me my release. Back Afghani, it's got you weak in the knee. Some seeds and dust, you got bust on. Yeah, it's hard on me. 30 days in a hole. 30 days in a hole. 30 days in a hole. You cast around. Well, it was sure a slap. Take a greasy heart, roll in the X-bar, get your head spinning round. You're out on the road. Well, there's a new highway code. Take some urban noise, urban poison. Gonna listen to
Watt from Pedro show. Started off with John Coltrane playing Things Ain't What They Used to Be. And then we heard 30 Days in the Hole, a live version of a Humble Pie song by Mike Watt and the Black Gang. I'm here in Pedro, April 13th, 2008, and my pad. Not with Brother Matt, he couldn't do it. Just got back from his Mexican kayak trip. And we'll hear all about that next week. He saw a lot of whales and stuff. I don't want to ruin anything with that. So, joining me today is Miss Peak.
Hello, again.
Who came from sweatier parts.
Oh, 100 degrees it was.
Now, Pedro here, it's in the 80s. We got Santa Ana's. When I was pedaling this morning, I had wind in my face coming back. So, westerly. Yeah. And when they're westerlies, I know they're Santa Ana's. And that means they're coming out of the desert. Because you, a typical trend is easterly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, pushing me as I'm going back. In my face as I'm going. And it was the opposite.
Right.
And I just know it was going to be warmer. And it was, and it got hot on me as I was pedaling. Mm-hmm. But being in the Pedro here and by the water in the harbor, it generally is cooler. So maybe it's okay for you to be here rather than where you were.
Yeah. I saw a couple few cars overheating.
Wow.
And parked to the side and getting towed and whatnot. Yeah. I think, I don't know if it's unusually warm, but this weekend has been pretty up there.
For April?
For April, yeah.
It kind of is warm. But at least it's dry and ain't sweaty.
Oh, I like it sweaty.
Yeah. Can't handle your humidity.
Yeah, I grew up in Thailand. I'm all about humidity.
You mean you didn't tolerate it? You just got into it.
Yeah, well, it's more used to.
Did you use air conditioning?
Yeah. Ah. Well, after you got into that, it's also another set of used to.
You want to get anything done.
Yeah.
Like the South.
Yeah.
Or anywhere east of the Rockies in the U.S. come summer. Speaking of Black Gang, well, first I should say, because it's been 3 weeks since I did a show, and April 1st was D. Boone's birthday, so happy belated birthday wishes to D. Boone. On April 1st, his birthday, I started Black Gang album. Now it's Klein, Bob Lee. The last version of the Black Gang that I toured with, and I just felt this was the version, I think. Although I loved it with the Hodges and Joe Biza. And in fact, the Contemplating the Engine Room was Nels Klein and Steve Hodges.
Mm-hmm.
I just thought this was the group to help me realize this. It's not an opera-like engine room. But it is a concept. And the concept is autumn. And, or fall.
But you'd rather say autumn, actually.
I think fall is like a U.S., because over in England they say autumn.
I was just saying,
yeah,
by the word choice.
No, I don't think they use fall. I think that's a U.S. colloquialism. But I like fall in a way because it has a another meaning.
That's what I'm saying, and you don't want to use
it. Well, that's where I heard it. And, but, yeah, my life. Definitely not spring, hopefully not winter. And I had the sneaking hunch summer is gone. So, yeah, autumn. Because it came on me really September that I got to do this thing. And the plan was to do it before the solstice, which was my birthday.
Like your 50th birthday.
Actually, it was the day after. I think it was the 21st this year.
Yeah, it's always about 21st, yeah.
And my birthday's the 20th.
And
but
mine
sickness
too.
Way late, and yours too.
Thank you.
The celebration, not saying birthday, because...
I don't care.
You're many moons.
I was just saying.
Before.
Not many. I'll just keep saying.
The peak's a woman. She ain't a girl. Or anything, she ain't 50. Sickness waylaid that.
Mm-hmm.
And then
for a while.
Second attempt was going to be beginning of February.
Mm-hmm.
And then Nels, huge hurt on his pinky via the hand, via the arm, via the shoulder, via the neck.
The
actually,
bone.
It originates in the neck and degenerating neck bones. And which was a big scare.
Yeah.
For him, for me, for anyone who loves that man's music. So, had to be put off again. And so it seemed like there was a conspiracy against this album. But then here on D. Boone's birthday, 5 days with Jimmy Messer at his studio, The Institution, downtown L.A., 7th Street, just east of L.A. River, cement-lined river, sewer trough. You know, it empties out in Long Beach.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of where, because you can't rent yaks in Pedro.
Right.
But you can get them in Long Beach, so you might paddle out there like what you're going to do one day.
One day. Water.
You don't like water, right? And yeah, I can't believe Thai people don't like water. I mean,
Thai people do.
Yeah,
I don't.
Because the ocean, it's almost a huge peninsula.
I'm not a representative of,
right?
of Thai people.
Yeah. Well, you're one kind. Just like Pedro for me. I have people talk to me about that. Are all Pedro people like you?
Yeah. Well, I never learned how to swim, so that's kind of a bummer.
You wear a life jacket. You float until I fucking drag into the yacht.
What about the nightmare I have of drowning in bottomless ocean?
That's a life jacket's for. You
yeah,
just
I
float.
I don't trust it. Something will eat my legs.
Yeah, that might happen. But then you would be saved and pushing yourself around on a cart. You'd learn a new way.
That's awesome.
Yeah, isn't it? Take that away. But, as I was saying, Jimmy Messer on the knobs, Nels Klein the guitar, Bob Lee on the drums, and myself were the only folks there. Except you, Pete. You were the only witness, and you were there twice.
Twice.
On the last day and the next to the last day, right?
Briefly. I think it was...
Is it Friday and Saturday or Thursday and Saturday?
Thursday and Saturday.
Okay, so day three and day five you were there.
Mm-hmm.
And day three is shorter.
Right, because I was still milling around the house, and I got a call and said that, it's, that you guys might
be
done.
Because I wanted pictures. I mean, there's a hard
2 hours.
Way to take pictures when you're trying to play and... Now, your impression of the session, I mean, should I explain the setup? I mean, the setup was, both Bob Lee, Nels, Jimmy never heard any of this. It was all in my head. I wrote all the songs.
Yeah.
Or in my little, where I play the bass into the Pro Tool.
Mm-hmm,
and demo, I guess. Idea, just
rough
bass
track.
On there. And so... I mean, the situation of recording lends itself to this kind of experiment where you can just throw the tunes on the guys and see how they react in the moment and then capture. I mean, typically with my bands, going back to Minutemen days, you prac in the prac pad and get them all down, and then the recording thing is pretty near like a gig in front of microphones.
Yeah. Well,
this is like, whoa, you just show it to them and then how they react. Now,
right.
This is the way I did Engine Room. So I knew about Nels, but I also know about Nels because of all the years of improvisation he's done and stuff like this.
Mm-hmm.
Now, for Bob Lee, it was a new thing. He had never done a record like this, and he was very frightened.
Yeah.
But like Hodges told me way back when we did Engine Room, being a little bit... afraid is like being a little bit excited. So it's probably, don't worry, it's an asset.
Well, it's usually when you feel like you have a lot of challenge in front of you and you want to deliver, and that's kind of the nervousness.
Yeah, but I also think for Bob Lee, I'm guessing here because I'm not in his head, although there is, he did do a recording spiel. Did you see that?
No.
It's on the internet.
Oh,
yeah, I'll put a link
blog?
To it on my Hoot page where he actually writes a diary of the recording.
Oh, wow.
Each day.
I should write a diary of the 2 days.
There's anxieties in there, and the same ones he had voiced to me, not knowing what it's going to be.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
that,
yeah.
There, it's not just the debt of delivering, but the fear of the unknown. You don't know what's going to come at him.
Mm-hmm.
But see, that's what I'm counting on in a way.
Mm-hmm.
So he'll react, and I'll get a certain kind of quality to this album that I can't with a pracked up record, like when I do the Missing Men record after the Stooges tour. I'll prack that with Raul and Tom,
mm-hmm.
and then take it on tour. And in fact, I'm going to record it halfway. So you want to see that one, you're going to have to fly to New York, because I'm going to do a Tony Mamone studio in Brooklyn.
Fly
halfway in the tour, I'll stop for a week.
Just
Greyhound.
Greyhound me. Awesome. I'll see you in
take
a week.
Your camera. No, you'll be a week before. We'll plan it. You'll arrive there on time. We won't be waiting.
That's right. You're you.
Well, the laughs are much bigger than the tiny voice.
But yeah, my impression of the session being that it's pretty live, it's pretty present, and I think you mentioned that. And I've seen a lot of recording sessions over the years, and this one is kind of less control, less instrument. It's not isolated. It's more.
There's one room.
Yeah, it's in one room, and people are engaging and kind of working final details out until the last minute, and then just kind of go for it. And of course, you have Nell's improvised thing on top of a steady rhythm.
Yeah.
Pretty much. And so.
Maybe I had to explain a little more to Bob Lee.
No, I don't think so, because like you said, you know, you know them and you know what they're going to react to your tunes. So I was just kind of watching how it kind of come together amazingly with only a few takes. And
not hardly any playbacks. That freaked Bob Lee out.
Yeah. Yeah, I when you said about his nervousness, yeah, on day three, I did see a little bit of that when you were introducing the next tune kind of thing, and you kind of telling him what you want out of it. And then by day five, he's pretty much on it, you know. He's pretty much like in with the program, throw it at me, I will get this down, and he did it. So it was kind of amazing to watch all that.
And Jimmy?
Jimmy, yes,
he facilitated it pretty good, huh? He never leaned on us. He never.
Yeah,
he's a very patient man.
Yeah, I mentioned.
He was the young man.
Mentioned that he is super
34,
cool.
Right?
He's 34. He's the first time I met him was on that day three, and you know, I've met a handful of engineers in the past that usually have preconceived ideas of how they want things to go, but
control issues.
Yeah. I mean, of course, you know, they're running the actual control, but that doesn't mean they have to have ego over everyone.
Yeah.
He was pretty cool and just polite and kind of let things happen the way that I think it was perfect for the project, because that's kind of, there was a certain strong theme already, you know.
In a lot of ways, I think he was the fourth guy.
Yeah.
We were all keying on him in a way.
And
he never bogarted. This has to be done this way.
Yeah.
This can do this, that.
No. And his suggestions are pretty polite and it's pretty insightful. And he didn't step over any lines. And I mean, it's not really. Yeah, it was a really mellow thing. And I'm not like, I don't put recording engineer into a certain level of expectation either, but he was completely, it was a really good scene. And I think it was the right vibe for the whole theme of the project. So,
and you know, one of the reasons I wanted you there was take pictures.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's kind of hard to do while I'm recording.
Yeah, and I hardly did, and I did
the amazing camera work with the movies.
I didn't get yelled at, but I pretty much I tell people I'd ruin a tune because you had to tell me to snap pictures and I wasn't.
Oh, one of those takes?
And you lost it.
The last song?
That was the one before I took the whole footage of the whole, what is that, 15 minutes worth of
which is on YouTube. Yeah, I think we did three takes, and you got the third one.
Yeah.
And it had a long coda, and I extended jam with Nels on the guitar, and I just thought it would be interesting for people to see how this guy, because he works a lot of pedals. He brought 36 pedals.
Yeah.
To the gig.
Pretty much he used it all.
Yeah. And he brought a bunch of guitars, but he ended up mainly just using that 59 Jazzmaster Fender.
Mm-hmm.
Although one song he used one of Jimmy's Telecasters. Or Esquire. Actually, not a real one.
Uh-oh.
It played
right,
really
right,
good
right.
And sounded good. And that's where Nels got the television sound for the Dick Lloyd thing for a messed up machine. In fact, at the gig, we did some band gigs.
Yeah, which one? San Diego or Long Beach?
Well, you saw Long Beach.
Yeah, well,
you didn't see San Diego.
I saw and, the back of heads of people in Long Beach.
Yeah, and he wasn't loud enough there anyway. But the Ocean Beach one, it wasn't San Diego's Ocean Beach, but it was very close.
Yeah.
And That was one of my favorite band gigs ever, and had all the recipe of a fucking nightmare. No, it really was really good.
Yeah, but
and I told the sound man to put nails up, especially the second set. But we had to play two sets. That was a nightmare. Had to drive 120 miles by myself. As soon as I got there, I caught in the boat, and they beat on the hatch right before.
Mm-hmm.
Had to go on, and it was weird for me. You know, driving down, I was crying and shit.
What for?
It had a lot. Insensitive man.
For what? Oh no, let's hear it.
So, I had all the makings of going to be a fucked up gig, and I was very surprised.
You have like
that it turned out to be one of the best gigs. I don't know. I fed them guys a lot of new bass lines.
Is it, you requiring because of the thing about the gig, or is it about other
things? No. I was saying the things that go into like. He said, you know, when you showed us that tune and you said this is a machine song, well, it's called Messed Up Machine.
Mm-hmm.
He said, yeah, you did not write a machine song. I said, no. He said, no, you wrote a television song, not the machine, the band.
Mm.
Richard Hell, Tom Verlaine.
Okay.
That band from New York City.
Don't know.
Never heard of them?
No.
They're like in the middle 70s. And, I mean, Richard Hell quit before they put out their first album. But there's an album called Marquee Moon that's really big in the old punk scene. Although, I remember when they first played L.A., the Whiskey, and everybody was calling them hippies. I think it was Whiskey.
Mm.
Yeah, it was weird, hippies. Because they had longer songs and whatever.
Mm.
Hippie was bad word.
Yeah, right.
So anyway, that's what Nels told me. And see, this is the thing about it. You bring them out of your head. This is why it's a band. Mm-hmm. And not, even though, yeah, Mike Wadd and this and that. In the way, I'm just instigator. Because once you let that ball roll, it has a life of its own. And that's what I'm looking for. And I'm into that.
Yeah, so am I. In a different context.
I think all people who have adventure in mind are like that.
Mm-hmm.
They have a certain kind of confidence or belief that they can let go.
You think?
I think so much of socialization, a big platitude that's floated on that, is be in control or you're not getting over it. You know,
mm-hmm.
But some things, Especially a collaboration with an ensemble, musical ensemble, where you try to make an interesting conversation out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it is different than a gig. It's not going to go just into the air. It's going to be a work. And actually, at the end of the day, all that's realized is what comes out the speakers into people's ears. All this other knowledge, you know, how it was done, and was there prac or no prac? I mean, does that mean anything?
Well, to some degrees, was, you know, if people don't get too caught up by that, because some people tend to only focus on that and not go to the next step, you know?
What's the next step?
Which is, instead of consciously thinking about the step-by-step other people, how other people do things, well, I mean, a lot of people like to talk about gear and just...
I noticed Nels and Jimmy talk about them boxes a lot. Didn't you?
Well, some people talk about...
And I never got on them for that because, you know, a little fetish is okay. I just use my finger. Now, I used a big Thunderbird.
I
used a big bass. If you want to get into some fetish shit. I didn't use the little bass because I think, it hurts my hands to play a bigger bass, but sitting down, I can have my hand close. It doesn't hurt. And with the bass being long wavelengths, the longer your string is closer to the fundamental, and you don't have to rely on overtones as much. And... also, Jimmy, when I recorded with Jimmy once before. This is where I met him. Mm-hmm. It was that lady who won the game show. And he liked that blue bass. And I did the engine room with that bass.
Yeah.
Mostly.
Oh, that blue one, yeah.
Yeah.
That's pretty.
1966. Older than you?
Just by a little. No, but, I'm saying this, like, yeah, you could talk about gear and stuff, because that's what
and
part
I used
of it.
Eden VT300 amp to a 410 Eden DX, D410 XTL speaker box.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about before, we're all in the same room, so stuff's bleeding all over.
Yeah.
Which also kind of, like, puts a mandate on, you better play together.
Right.
Because you can't really overdub stuff. It's going to sound different, because we're going over each other's mics now. This Saturday, the 19th, Nels is going to come in and add guitar. But can't replace. He's on the overhead mics on my bass mic. You know, my bass is over probably in the kick drum mics and shit like this.
Yeah.
Especially the quieter songs.
Yeah.
But I wanted that. You know? A little bit of danger, a little bit... And we've been around. We've been playing. Why not take chances like that a little bit? You know, and it's analogous a lot for my midlife thing. You know?
Mm-hmm.
I was really trying to relate the experience I'm having being 50 with making a record. It was a strange, weird way, because I never thought of that before.
Yeah.
You know, I never thought a lot of this shit before until I ended up here. So that's where I am.
What do you mean, like, at this...
being middle age. I never thought of, I mean, when I was young, I thought about old.
Yeah.
Don't want to be that.
I think
but
about
I never thought about middle.
Well, I think about it constantly, this shit.
Well, women have the clock.
You know. Oh. The clock.
The clock. And society, too, puts a big heavy shit on older women, where they give guys a lot more slack. Although guys don't feel it, because they feel very competitive with the younger men. Which is why heart attacks are very
common.
Prone to middle-aged men. Yeah, because they're still trying to compete with younger men. So even though society gives them a break, they don't give themselves a break. And they have these big midlife crises.
Well, it's kind of...
It's just a theory.
It's hard to separate between what you really want and what you society really wants, because you take in a lot of other people's expectations into...
Yeah, you're programmed with certain things.
Yeah.
And just think, you know, I've played the rules, I've done everything they asked, and you're in the middle of life, which means, like, whoa, glass is half empty, not half full.
Yeah.
And what's it all mean?
And it's
what's all this mean?
Wash.
What's everything mean? And I think the momentum carrying you as a younger person well, you're going to live forever, you know, this kind of thinking more, and there's no consequences, and who cares?
Well, the younger person wishes to have more experience to know how to do things, so it's kind of...
That would be good.
It's a loose situation.
And that's the way I look back at things. I wouldn't go back because I like the experiences.
Yeah.
And I'm too afraid of having to go relearn that bullshit.
Yeah.
No way. But even with this more resilient body.
Mm-hmm.
Fuck it.
But, I mean, and it's also... Cultures are set up to be... It's not like... It's just made up. I mean, the social order is also in line with what nature, you know, your body can only do so much for so long, for so many things, and then the next stage of life, you have different sets of things that you do with it, you know? So
Act 3. That's what Lee Ronaldo called it.
Yeah.
When I asked him about this.
You have to just be conscious of who you are and what you are able to do and not kind of look too far forward or too far back because it's something you can't do anything about. So.
No, but...
I mean, yeah, in women it's a little bit more obvious because the change is kind of drastic if you have kids or something. Your body
That's
really
right.
changed. So it's not like, you know, social are putting pressure on you as much as...
No, but they want you to invest in the system early and don't have doubts. Don't hesitate.
Well, that goes without...
You know, but middle age, it catches up. And what happens is, I think people look in the mirror and say, fuck society, what do I want? What does all this mean?
But isn't that what
Which
that
mean? That should be from all the way. Maybe, even as kids.
Well, I just think that's kind of a Western idea to look into yourself and ask yourself what you want. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, but they sell this materialism linked to individuality and expression. And that's... maybe they turn east and they think, what is the spirit of it all?
And the east
because I've accumulated
west.
All this material.
Yeah, and
I've spent my whole life. I'm in the middle now,
yeah.
and the mortgage and the car and this and that and that. And what's it all mean?
Yeah.
And it's sometimes it's a freak out.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's a little bit more kind of Western idea.
Maybe it should be a freak out though.
It's not very.
Maybe it should be a freak out because these things aren't. Yeah, because I don't know if society. You know, a lot of things might happen just out of weird accident or mm-hmm. a weird habit.
Mm-hmm.
Might not be so thought out. It might not be all total control mechanism from bosses. And there's also just the duality of the individual
mm-hmm.
and the group.
Yeah.
The herd.
Well, yeah, I think the confusion comes in with the globalization. And.
But maybe the confusion's good. Because these things aren't settled.
Well,
obviously, the human condition has set up a lot of problems for itself.
Well, I don't go so hard to say good. It's just, it's too quantifying. It just is.
No, but it's good. They have to deal with it, and they might come up with better solutions.
Well, so you would think that it would be a better solution. It's just kind of evolving into its own thing. You know what I mean? It could be as good as it is bad.
Yeah, well, there's consequences. Yeah.
Yeah, so...
What would be good? More freedom?
Well, see, more freedom, not necessarily going to be good. Right?
On an individual level, more freedom, more liberty?
No.
That's a bad thing?
It could be. Because, like, imagine to extend that people get to do what exactly they want to do.
To be free to be racist?
And they be free to not do a lot of things that needs to be done in society, you know what I mean? Then a lot of work are not going to get done.
Yeah.
So
unless you're forced into it.
Yeah, so it's like a certain inequality.
A strong father.
It exists so shit can get done in a certain way. And some people will have it less. Some
what about
will
an
have
inspiring
more.
Father versus the strong?
I don't understand.
A hand. The stern.
Like what? Like
you're inspired mm-hmm. somebody instead of them telling you.
Oh.
Now, I've learned about these skills about being a band leader.
Mm-hmm.
It's your band. You can tell them what to do, but you don't always get the best performance. It's better to acquire art skills at the art of inspiration. Yeah. Where they don't feel beat down.
Well, that idea is completely foreign to me.
Beatings will continue until morale improves.
But
or there's another thing where you... Somehow, I mean, it's quite a skill, and it's always changes with the people that you're dealing with.
Of course,
but it's It's got a lot more finesse and gradations than just laying down the law and saying this has to be done.
Right, but see, with my experience watching you dealing with different groups of bands that you're involved with, sometimes you have to be one, sometimes you have to be the other, and most of the time you have to be both. You have to be inspiring and authoritative.
Oh, shit, the phone. Here, keep talking.
Oh, let's see.
Explain yourself.
Explain myself. Let me see if I can get my thoughts together. With you leading a band.
Doing the radio show, right?
I think the other band members are sometimes are more rowdy than another. Yeah, and you're just gonna have to lay the rule. I'm not naming names, but some people need to be told that you need to get back in the van immediately, or else. So, I mean, asking 5 times didn't work. You're just gonna have to tell them the rules, and it's, you know. So I'm just saying that.
Yeah, but haven't I been lucky to play with guys that don't need that much?
No, I'm saying like inspiring would work perfectly if the people who are involved are aware about themselves enough, about the program, about the main objective. With, you know, you kind of put a trust with them.
Yeah, if I set the situation up, which would make it kind of apparent, which would probably
be positive
and conducive to the making things happen, and then they made the choice.
Right.
See?
Yeah.
I say, well, what is to be done? Here's what it looks like is challenging us.
Mm-hmm.
See? But, yeah, especially coming from military background and stuff, I sometimes fall way short of that and just holler at them.
That's what I'm saying. Because I've seen you being both.
But I want that other way to kind of shrink and go away and be passed.
Well, I personally take comfort knowing that you could do the yelling. Because I am like kind of passive, and a lot of time in my own experience, I need to get a lot of things done, and I have a problem.
Yeah, but you don't work in ensemble situations so much.
I know, but
you're more like Raymond, where you have to.
No, I work with people that, you know, work under me, and I need to tell them what to do and tell them what's up, but I don't have...
I was talking more about your photography. See, your camera, your vision.
Right. But I'm talking about my job, that I have people that I need them to do things.
Right.
And a lot of time they don't, and they have all kinds of reasons why they can't, and I wish I'm a little bit more stern. I wish I had that authoritative spiel and just kind of like, this is how it needs to be. Just get your ass together. Shit needs to get done.
When I want your opinion, I'll beat it out of you. Okay.
Right. See, I need that. So that's why I'm inspired by your authoritative manner.
Fascistic aspirations.
Yes. I want that.
That's great.
And things need to get done.
I want to grow up to be Stalin.
Yeah, well, I'm telling you, I'm growing up to be like you in a lot of ways, so this is another thing I can look forward to.
I'm going down. So I want to be a libertine more.
Well, you're going into winter hibernation.
No, I'm in fall.
Yeah, but that's where you're heading towards.
I know, but like I said, the concept is in my head, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You people will find out when it's done, and then you can judge my work.
But yeah.
At the same time, it is an ensemble. It is a coming together. It's not all in my head.
Yeah.
You know, which is an interesting thing. I mean, just being a bass player and organizing the music, it's coming from a kind of different than most. Most songs are written on pianos and guitars.
Yeah.
They're not written on basses.
True.
Almost like writing a song on kick drum or cymbals. You're asking the guys to just fill in, you know, but
yeah.
I learned how to do it with D. Boone, and, you know, I grew up playing with him, and the connection with us was very natural because of learning together. But now it's Klein, probably the closest guy to D. Boone on that level where I can just play for him.
Yeah.
And And Bob Lee was afraid of it, you know, in a way. But I thought he rose to the occasion. Yeah. I thought he did great.
Yeah, he did.
And it was that kind of record I wanted to make. Authority issues and all that crap. I mean, those guys give you so much respect, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Part of... You're talking about in the moment, how you deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think... And this is probably something you're not in control of at work. Part of the attempt at solution
mm-hmm.
is who you get together in the first place.
Right.
Yeah. Where you have to deal with what is there. I got to pick the guys, and I picked these guys for certain reasons.
Right.
Because they were conducive to this kind of trip.
Right.
In fact, all my bands.
Right.
I mean, there's amount of luck because I can only pick from people I've met, so I've been very lucky to meet people.
And
but all
our,
my bands.
It was again argued that it has nothing to do with luck.
Yeah, because you say I play a certain way and that attracts people.
Yeah, of like mind.
But if I lived in Earl, Arkansas,
yeah,
the pool might be a little smaller.
There's a reason why you don't live there.
The Vietnam War. Right? That's how I got here.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's the greatest, you know, way to put together a band.
Yeah, not in Arkansas.
No. No, or like, I'm going to go where my father's stationed. I mean, I had to. I was a boy.
Yeah.
You're leaving Virginia. Yeah, Earl, Arkansas is where my great-grandfather's from. I finally went to it.
Yeah? When recently?
You know, I passed it a lot. Many tours I've passed it. I've always been afraid to go into it. Yeah, when I did that trip in October.
Yeah, okay.
I stopped. I went
with the Stooges?
The tower. I played with the Stooges in Las Vegas. That was like at the end of it. I drove around the United States and I went to Earl, Arkansas.
Yeah, what, you just went to take a road trip? Is that what happened?
Yeah, it was like a tour without kicks.
Yeah,
I got heavy calluses on.
I knew
not
you
on
would,
the tips of my fingers, but
I think
anyway,
I stopped
in Earl.
I had an email or something about you just driving and stuff.
You know, 7,805 miles. We're getting off the thing here. We're supposed to be talking about this record.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I could talk about myself to no end, but you were there.
Yeah.
And you should tell them a little bit more about how it went down.
Oh, did I say all that stuff?
You were there for what, 5 songs, 6 songs?
I think we mentioned
so
that.
So almost half of it. We did 12 songs.
No, I only saw a few songs.
I think it was 3 each day.
Because I wasn't there all whole day Thursday.
That's right. I was only there at night.
What was it, Thursday? Yeah. I was only there like a couple hours.
Yeah,
I
know. So maybe 4 songs.
Yeah. No, actually, it was 1 song on the last... On the
Thursday, and then
Thursday.
3. I know Saturday was 3 songs.
Yeah, but I was only in the tail end of this. So, only a couple songs, basically.
Oh, yeah.
Because on Thursday, you were still working out on the song that you were going to record Friday, and that's...
Ended up not having to do it.
Okay.
Friday, right?
Yeah, I don't know what went down Friday.
Or maybe that was Saturday. One of them, we thought, oh, man, we don't have it. And then when we came in and heard it in the morning, it was like... That was one where we heard a playback.
Yeah.
So, yes, it's good enough. Let's don't go for it anymore.
Yeah. Okay, I heard that.
I have a tour diary, too. I'm not a tour diarist, a recording diary. Okay. So you can check that. Hoot page. My memory ain't so good on it. But just say what you saw of those songs.
What I saw? I don't know what else I can expand upon it, but I was... On Thursday, I mostly was in the control room looking into the work in progress in the recording through the window there. And just kind of talk with Jimmy and, you know, get to know how his take on the whole thing was. And that was cool.
And what was that?
What was that?
Because I didn't hear that.
Of course you didn't.
I was in the other room.
Yeah. Well, he kind of explained to me what his impression was. You know, kind of, you have everything kind of written out and planned out. So it's just a matter of going through step by step, and that's what was going on at that time. Because I'm not told. Like a lot of things that jump in on what you're doing is that you don't really tell me what the hell is going on, or the concept, or the whatever, you know, the program, even
Autumn.
It's Autumn. And on Saturday, I got to be in the recording room with the
you got to be above us.
Yeah, I get to climb in my skirt onto this I guess
shelf.
This storage shelf area, because Mike was directing this shot of overhead where you can see everyone. And
that's what I wanted. I wanted shots where we could get all of us.
Yeah.
My camera didn't have a wide enough lens, but
that's
maybe yours
right.
did.
Yeah.
See, that'd be great.
Yeah.
Because the room was small enough where we're all playing almost like a gig.
But,
I mean, we're facing each other, so we're not facing a crowd.
But I'm sorry.
I'm sitting in a chair. Nails has a little area.
Yeah.
To dance with his
to
pedals.
To your left.
Yeah. And then starboard is Bob Lee with his drum set.
Way across from you.
Mm-hmm. So we all could maintain eye contact with us really
right.
easy. We didn't even talk with each other.
In which, that's how the picture that, if I come around to it, would be a picture on top of your heads, in which you didn't want.
What about outfits?
The outfit. What, you and your djembe?
I wore the djembe every day
yeah.
of the record. I liked it.
Yeah.
It's very comfortable. It's kind of, studios don't have windows.
Yeah. Except the glass.
Oh, between the control room and
yeah.
the recording room. But they don't go to the outside.
Yeah, you don't want to.
Right.
With all that's going
so
on around you.
It can be sweaty.
You. Yeah.
It can be sweaty, so.
You were
also, it was a totem. You know the word totem?
Totem.
An object that's a symbol?
Yeah. The totem pole and totem stuff.
Luck.
Okay. Or sacred.
Charm.
More like sacred, because they
or huge. Sacred.
Usually.
Just something you hope helps that isn't so rational. Right?
Yeah. So,
right.
What
my,
about
my
it?
My favorite
is it
shoes. I wore setas.
Is it your djembe was supposed to be?
I thought the djembe would help me.
Okay.
I thought it would help me relax. For sure, it was very comfortable.
Yeah.
Man, it's not a bathrobe. People tell me. Not a bathrobe. And I think Nels had a few different outfits. Sometimes a button shirt, sometimes a t-shirt.
Yeah, but, yeah.
Bob Lee was t-shirt.
Yeah.
I don't know the pants.
I don't think
Nels wore Levi. One time he wore very high water. I think middle of the calf.
I don't know.
You
maybe.
Don't pay attention?
No.
Only boys do that.
Only boys do. Especially you
I think
boys.
Jimmy, well, the record's got two jigs. I thought there should be a dance element to the record, so
really?
I put two jigs on there.
What jig?
And so
what
a jig is like an Irish dance. Actually, when Shakespeare put on his plays, it was convention that no matter what the play was, it could be the most deep, sad tragedy. And at the end, all the actors would come out and do these little fast dance and sing body,
mm-hmm.
dirty songs,
mm-hmm.
and that was called the jig. Usually it's a fast little dance.
Yeah.
Pirates do it, gypsies.
Okay. I wouldn't know it. It's like completely
it's
foreign to me.
It's a little fast, quick dance. Yeah, the tie dancing, the eyeballs, huh? There's something,
no,
I guess, in the traditional.
No, that's Indonesian.
Is that more Bali?
Yeah.
Okay.
They do it all slow.
Yeah, but the eyes...
Yeah.
Very
I think that has to do with, I think, the Indian influence, probably.
Yeah.
Because they have a thing with the eyes, yeah.
Yeah.
They all have really huge eyes.
Yeah.
I mean, unlike, you know, us Chinese-looking people up north
right.
there.
But they open them very wide. It's really intense. It's different. Maybe it's as different as jigs are to you. But anyway, I have two jigs on there. So the last day, I know Jimmy wore a Guinness shirt.
Oh, really? I didn't notice
yeah.
that. I need to pay more attention to this thing so I can have a conversation with you who wore what.
Yeah, well, that's why you were asked to be on the show.
Yeah.
And I think we're running out of time for the first hour.
Yeah, I'll talk.
And we got a few moments. Yeah, it is all talk, but you know, the record was a big event in a way. I've been thinking about it. It came to me in September, as summer was ending. It was like, and then also the realization that Nels ain't always available. His windows of opportunity can be tiny ones.
He is getting more and more.
So I actually wanted to do this Black Gang record after the Missing Men, which is the third opera, because I wrote that before.
Missing Men was done last year.
No, it's going to be done after the Stooges tour. I had to put them out of order. But in September, I realized I want to do this fall record. Mm-hmm. My next record is going to be fall. And I want to do this before the solstice.
Mm-hmm.
And it all came to me. I wrote it all up like that.
Yeah.
Actually, some of it came last spring.
Right. Okay.
And it ends up, I record it in the spring because of, you know, the sicknesses and hurts. But they're both equinox things in between.
Okay.
The summer and the winter is the high and the low of the sun. So in betweens are the equinox.
Yeah.
Equidistant.
Okay.
I think that's where the word comes from. So it's okay. I mean, it kind of worked out the way it did. And I like that better than society deciding how things work out. Just you set up situations and random events come in, and even with your great big plans, you're loose enough on them to let the way of the world grow them.
Yeah.
Incubate them.
Well, it's exactly goes
Mother
back
and
to the exactly goes back to the same duality. Whether you're gonna be inspired for things to happen, or you have to control it to make it happen. So.
Yeah, maybe a little both.
Yeah.
Got to get the ball rolling. Yeah. To get Nels and Bob Lee to play a certain way, they had to have these songs from Watt.
Because
if Nels wrote them,
Of
course they'd be different if Bob Lee wrote them.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's no way they're realized. But in a way, I look back on how I was thinking of them and what those guys did to my ideas grew them bigger than I would have ever imagined.
Yeah.
Because I'm limited by my own experiences.
Right.
That's what's the beauty of bringing the other humans in.
Yeah. And your impression of other people is still only reflecting your own experiences. So when other people like Nels and Bob Lee come in, they actually push it further with the specific guidance you give them.
And yeah.
I witnessed all that, and it's really grateful that I was there. It felt pretty chilling and comfortable, but yet significant. So it was kind of my take on it.
Now, when you hear the final thing, it will surprise you.
Yeah, I am looking forward to be surprised.
And both Bob Lee and Nels, well, Nels knows because of the engine room and stuff. He had no idea it was going to sound like that.
Really?
Yeah, even though he's a big piece of it.
Yeah.
But I think that's kind of, in movie situations, it's like that. You're shooting scenes and you don't really know until you watch that thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why you have, I think, different people doing it, because some people have to have perspective.
Right.
And other people have to be in the minutia of the moment.
But then it's only people that you trust that they will bring something to
you.
Yeah.
Symphony, great performers, but then the conductor has the big picture.
Right.
And they need each other.
Yeah.
They need each other.
That's one extreme of it, yeah.
Extreme, it's kind of close. It's music. Probably a little closer to the movie analogy. But the same thing is that the guys involved, like Bob Lee and Nell, are so close to it that it's hard for them to know. Also, they can't look in my head. But then I also couldn't see how they were going
to
react. I didn't see how they were
going to
react. So it's change on change on change. And
yeah.
It's an interesting process.
Yeah.
And here's Jimmy, who's the outsider to all of us. You know.
It's kind of like.
But at the same time, he's the one responsible for capturing it.
Yeah, he's the glue.
Yeah. He's the documenter.
Yeah.
Because all that stuff could be
lost if he wasn't competent. So all important people, just in different levels of the experience.
Mm-hmm.
But they're all essential, you know. And I don't really put one above the other. Not a real hierarchy to it. It's just, this is what I needed.
Yeah.
What to do. And why I'm very grateful for them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They're very generous. A lot of people, I've just seen a lot of situations where it's not like that. And
yeah.
Again, that's why I consider myself very lucky. So, it was a big weight off my shoulder come Saturday night when it got done.
Yeah, wow. It got done early. It's my understanding is.
Yeah. Yeah, we didn't have to go all the way to nighttime.
Yeah, it was done around 7 or something.
Yeah.
It was still light up.
Which is good because it's lame to have to play tired. Fuck. Especially if it's going to last forever.
Yeah.
Okay. End of the first hour of the Wafa Pedro Show, April 13th, 2008 edition. Hold tight for hour two. April 13th, 2008. It's the second hour of the Wafa from Pedro Show. Thank you.
For Pedro Show. Start off the second hour with Liberation 6 by Yuka Honda.
Love her.
Yeah. Thinking of liberation, what's your ideas on what's happening in Tibet right now?
Oh my goodness. I don't have the specific details and statistics, but it's like a really sad scene. And it's not something new, you know, it's been going on for decades, and this whole China influence thing in the region, and I'm speaking also about Burma, because like somehow that issue is close to my heart, and that is not resolved.
Chinese, that's neighbor to Thai.
Yeah, and the Chinese having, they're not having the direct control, but they are supplying the Burmese military with, you know, weapons, support. So that was strike one last year, and now the Tibet thing is going on. It's horrific, and I don't really know what the solution is, but I think they need to lay off of that, and the whole Olympic thing. I support all sports, you know, and I think that can be fairly played. And
'cause you do kickboxing.
Yeah, but
extreme
fighting is not in the Olympics.
Not yet. You think so?
It might.
But you don't think it should be used as a vehicle for protest?
Well, no.
Are you torn?
I'm not torn as much as I think people need to be more informed in general all over the world, and there is no other platform in the global level right now than the Olympics, which is kind of, you know, everybody is kind of in it, like every country pretty much is in it, and I think like it could be used as a vehicle to bridge understanding, and that's my whole thing. It's just like for people to be aware of what's going on.
It's not to embarrass China.
Because
obviously it's their showpiece.
Yeah, and they have done a lot of disservice to their own people. Not that they've done much to liberate them, their own people before, but to just prepare this whole Olympic itself. And, you know, I just don't agree about a lot of ways that the Chinese government is going about their ways for the last 50 years also.
What can the Dalai Lama do?
No, nothing. I mean, in his position, he can't do anything really to be radical, because in his position, if you understand Buddhism, is not for you to actually take action or lead a political movement, because as a Buddhist leader, you leading is about being away from material matter. Even it's a country, origin, history, that is still a material matter. You know, you don't want to attach yourself to the kind of a reality of the world. You want
Maya.
Yeah, the Maya. But you more want to lift people spiritually, and you know, it's like two different things. So, but being that he is a human, so he is frustrated about you know, the whole culture being sort of pressed upon and almost systematically erased, and that's kind of upsetting, you know. Yeah. So, yeah, I'm pretty passionate about this issue, but I really don't know what can I say to make a difference, you know, or what solution that there to be had.
Chase the torch.
Or just put out the torches. Every country so far is like,
yeah.
I think I like that.
Yeah.
You know, just make an issue known. It's like, and I heard something interestingly enough, that the whole torch parade thing, it started with the Nazi. So look into the history of that before you go, oh, you know, the torch has nothing to do with politics. Like, look into the history of that one.
Yeah. Well, the Olympic torch goes back a couple thousand years.
Yeah, but the parading.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
Kind of scary.
Mm-hmm.
Humans in horde being crazy.
Yeah, but I mean, that's
burning
one thing
crosses.
You can always count on humans to be is always like freaking crazy.
Deliver the lowest expectation.
Especially when there's many of them together, you kind of end up with that as a result.
Okay, after that we heard Thursday, Wednesday, 12:30 a.m. by Motoko Honda, who Dos is going to play with on the 27th.
Really?
Here? Some KXLU thing downtown LA at Charlie O's.
Oh, I'm so
of
there.
Experimental music.
I think.
And we were asked to be part of it, which is righteous, knowing that Dos is considered experimental. What we look at is just two bass guitars.
Uh-huh. Wait, is it Yuga Honda is in that?
No.
That's just the first one.
Motoko Honda.
Ah.
Same last name.
No, it's just that you.
This lady plays prepared piano,
okay,
in an improvisational setting with her people, her gang.
Because I thought of that because Yuga was producing or doing something with Dos.
She's mixing the next album.
Yeah.
And she also does gigs where she improvises.
Wow,
she
love
told
to
me
see
about
that.
Some gigs with Fred Frith.
She's in New York, right?
Yeah. Just got back. She's in Japan for a couple weeks. And she's starting to mix the Dos album.
Wow, that's got to
be
something.
And after that, we heard Keiko Edo with Kumamoto Minyu Medley. And then Cicada by DJ Yachi.
Mm-hmm.
And
we got Japanese teams going here.
Ketsu Ago by Position Normal. They're from England.
Oh, sorry.
And then I think a Bay Area band called Toykestra did Shirley's Temple. And Toykestra,
oh shit,
they use toys.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah.
That's righteous. They make music with little
that.
Toy.
From you, I think.
Toy instruments.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. Tomorrow I go to San Francisco. Kind of on a recording tear.
And what is this project?
Yeah, Eric McFadden. Well, I play with
Banyan
Tuesday night. Nels can't do it because Nels is recording an album down here.
Yeah, his own.
Right? His own.
Well, if today he is in studio for his
Right, for the next 4 or 5 days. And that's why I couldn't do the Banyan gig. So replacing him on Guitar Tuesday will be Eric McFadden. guy from Albuquerque, but he's lived in Bay Area a long time.
Yeah.
Amazing guitars.
Met him through Nels. He's pretty amazing.
And he's going to, he asked me to record with him.
Mm.
Even with his bass player. He plays an upright.
Yeah, he's funny.
So it's going to be two basses.
Oh, did he talk to you really about that the last time he came to town? In Banyan gig. Was Nell's birthday show.
Oh, remember? Wow.
Yeah.
The
they
Mint.
Both came at the Mint.
That's
yeah.
where he asked me to record with him.
Yeah.
So I'm going to record with them tomorrow, play with them Tuesday night. But between the sound check Tuesday and the gig, the Touchton brothers from Mobile, well, they live in the Bay Area now, too. They have a band called XBXRX.
Yeah, we played.
And they have a side. You remember Dose played at the Smell with them?
Yeah, yeah.
And very animated, intense band. But they have a side project called Kit, and they asked me to play bass.
Wow.
So I'm going to record four songs with them in the space between the sound check and the...
Where? Oh, you're just going to whip
away?
In East
Bay. There's a studio in Oakland. Yeah, they're going to come get me.
For like 2 hours?
Uh-huh. And then bring me back, and I'll play the gig. So
you are so all over the place.
And of course, with
I
the
was.
Pro Tools at home, I've been doing a lot of... based on other people's music, they send me through the internet songs.
And then one for me.
Yeah. But I did that all myself.
Yeah.
That's bass on bass for my favorite things.
Yes. Yes. And I'm just going to do something
Sound
with
of Music.
It. Yeah.
It's not John Coltrane, but he does the most famous version.
Yeah.
And I play bass over it. But this is stuff unknown.
Which is cool, by the way, because that was like my growing up in Thailand, that was one movie that was being played over and over in my household.
Julie Andrews.
I love that movie. Yeah.
It has Nazis.
Yeah. Well, they were running away from it, so sorry.
And, yeah. This is stuff where people send me music and then I come up with the basses.
Yeah.
In fact, I just got two songs from Sam Duke yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And very interesting because you don't know what it is going to be. a couple weeks ago, I played to Powerbook music. You know.
Powerbook music?
Yeah. No real instruments.
Oh, right, right.
Just pewter.
Pewter.
Sounds.
Speaking of that stuff... I think Nails probably mentioned enough time, but Chaosilator is the buzzword of the month. He told you about that thing, right?
No.
It's insane. It's like this little device that it's about a size of the palm of your hand, or your whole hand, and it has a pad in the middle, and you can do programming, like sequence and loop all in one. With different sounds and instrument, that is a mesmerizer. You can,
oh, wow.
You probably can pick one up and just plug it up to your
amp.
Yeah,
but you know,
and
I've got software with sequencers to do make synthesizers, but I haven't really used it. It seems the bass is just so challenging to me.
Yeah,
there's too much to explore with that. So.
Oh, you're just not into it.
I'll put. Well, I'll just dilute the focus. Right now, I just got to keep getting on the bass.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I think it's important. I think it's important to do both realms, the mm-hmm. moment and then creating stuff for posterity.
Yeah.
You can't get carried away with either too far, or right. you kind of cheat the other one. It's
right.
this weird kind of coexistent thing.
Yeah.
So, you brought some music, right?
Yeah. First I would like to instigate Devin Hoff.
Oh, yeah, he's got a solo record. Devin was at the gig in Long Beach.
Devin Hoff is...
Because he was recording... Devin Hoff is the bass player for Nels Klein Singers.
Yes, and my best buddy.
And he has a solo project where it's just him on the stand-up bass.
Yeah, and it's amazing. This guy is
played on my
phenomenal.
50th birthday.
Yeah, and he's the most awesome guy I've met lately.
I got to have a good talk with him after the gig Thursday.
Yeah, he's also gave me a tune, which is...
So we'll play that right now. Thank you.
Watt from Pedro Show. That was Black and White by Light, something brand new. Their album Fantasia is coming out soon, May 21st. And May 10th, I go to Japan, to Tokyo, for a week to record with Mr. Shimi
Ishiko. 4 days after you go to the Rush concert.
Yeah,
me.
Right. I'm gonna see
Rush. That's important.
Last time I saw them was in late 70s with Tony Platt, so that'll be interesting.
Yes.
But anyway, I get to do a gig with Light in another version of Brother Sister's Daughter. Sam Bennett on drums, but Jim O'Rourke on guitar, Mr. Shimi on guitar.
In Tokyo?
With Light, yeah, on the 15th of May.
And you're going for?
At Mars in the Shinjuku part of Tokyo.
Oh, wow.
But
that's
mainly I'm going there to record 53 songs.
Oh, crap.
Mr. Shimi, Ms. Yuko. Spiels from Richard Meltzer, gave me a bunch of little poems,
okay.
And we're making music behind him, so we got to do 18 songs a day.
Oh.
No, four days, so 4 into 53 is what, it's 13 songs a day, but we'll do it. They're incredible musicians.
And you, how long will you be there?
1 week.
1 week.
And then I come back, and Stooges touring mm-hmm. for the summer starts May 30th, Madrid. Okay, before Light, we had Stefano Paglia with, or Paglia, it's Italian, not Spanish. And Stefano's a beautiful man, and he does experimental music. I met him touring with Second Man when I toured the second opera, Second Man's Mill Stand, in Italy. I did 6 gigs in Italy, and Stefano was with us for all of them.
When was that?
And he's his own... 2004.
Okay.
He's his own musician in his own right. But he's got a band called Three Quarters Had Been Eliminated. Is that name for a band? And several units he's part of, and they're all very adventurous, and he's just great. Big Stefano Paglia is a hero. From Genoa, but lives in Bologna. And that song was Question. And then before that, we had a band from China called Nakoma and a song called Mongolian Blues.
Yeah.
And we started off with The Torch by Devin Hoff, solo bass.
Devin!
Beautiful man.
Awesome person.
We're at the end of the second hour, the Watt from Pedro Show, April 13th, 2008 edition. Hold tight for hour three. April 13th, 2008, it's the third hour of the Watt from Pedro Show, and here's part six of Jack Flanders in Dreams of India.
Don't tell me that room has disappeared, though. I hate when that happens. Oh, wait. I was turned around. Here it is. Or was I turned around? First class shadows here. Boy. The drapes, the carpets, the cushions, the sofa. It's like an old set from the Arabian Nights. What did you expect to find, Mr. Flanders? Just what I see, I guess. Okay, lamp. There. Hey, don't flicker out on me. My imagination's doing fine without your help, thanks. I'll just sit for a while. Ugh. It's been a long day. But I don't want to sleep here. There's nothing. But there's something. Something in the corner. Up near the ceiling. Sort of a cloud. It's expanding. The shadows are going crazy. Don't move. Don't breathe. The cloud has come down. dancing on the ceiling. Shadows of people? No, it's like shadows of thoughts. I never thought of thoughts casting shadows, but they do. I think I'm getting a little nervous. I'll just casually reach for the lantern and... I don't have a hand. Or even an arm. So how do I pick up the lantern? With my teeth? What teeth? I think my head is gone. Did it steal my body while I was sitting here? The lantern's floating in the air. My heart has spread its sails to the idle winds for the shadowy island of anywhere.
The night kisses of fading day whispering. Is here.
That's my voice.
I am death, your mother. I am to give you fresh birth.
Right. Body or nobody, let's get out of here.
It was your voice?
I'd recognize it anywhere.
How can you laugh about this?
Well, to be honest, I was scared witless.
How did you run if you didn't have a body, Jack?
Well, you'll find that you can run a lot faster.
No, seriously.
I don't know. My body just sort of joined me as I was running down the hill.
Oh, so the palace is haunted.
Not by a ghost. I don't know what it is, but it does have a sense of humor. You think I'm nuts, don't you?
No, not at all.
Why are you looking at me like that?
I want to tell you something that I've never shared with anyone. Well, anyone except my aunt.
Go on.
Once, when I was younger, I must have been in my teens. I was here visiting my aunt, and I heard music coming from the palace. Now, my aunt had never permitted me to go up there. But with this music, it was so unbelievably sweet, you know, so sensual, really. I felt lured to go in. It was dusk, just growing dark outside, but it wasn't dark inside. And the music led me to the very same room that you were in. And that room was so lush. So, you know, the Persian carpets, the silk drapery, and very, very soft cushions. I just felt like lying down and sleeping. Now, when I woke, there was a man with a white turban sitting next to me, stroking my legs. It felt so... It tingled. He was smiling at me, and I could see he wanted to make love to me. Now, even though I knew he wasn't of this earth, I said, "What if I get pregnant?" He laughed and said it simply wasn't possible. I wanted so badly to give myself to him. But I was just too afraid. And then he gave up. He said, "You're not ready." And I wanted to say, "Wait, come back. I've changed my mind." but he just vanished.
Oh.
And when I told my aunt, oh, she was very disturbed, so angry. Not just angry at me, but at him. At it. She made me promise over and over never to set foot in that house again. Never, ever, ever.
Well, didn't she question that maybe you had dreamed it?
No.
So she knew what it was.
Oh, yes.
Do you think the same thing happened to her when she was young?
I'm certain it did.
Ooh. Do you think she allowed herself to be seduced?
I don't know.
Seduced by an entity that doesn't exist physically.
と今日チークピンク濃すぎ、先輩ちゃっかり明日有給取ってるし、先輩先輩先輩うるせえなクソガキ、できるね、一人なりたいセレブ、あれは派手な我は誰だ彼だ、涙うるんだからこうアンバランスで指導りやしてムラつきして立てるか一人で、明日はどっちか果てな、ズバリ勘定だ、に夢を委ねるか当たってない、特に予定がない、いいえそうでない、望む未来はどうした、何逃した、涙流した、猫が加えてにゃー、どうした、何取られた、群れはぐ、
Happy was the khaki sweatband, bold goat pot-bellied barnyard that only he noticed. The old fart was smart. The old gold cloth Madonna. Dancing to the fiddle and saw, he ran down behind the knoll and slipped on his wooden fish head. The mouth worked and snapped all the bees back to the bungalow. Mama was flattening lard with her red enameled rolling pin when the fish head broke the window, rubber eye erect and precisely detailed. Air holes from which breath should come is now closely fit, with the chatter of the old fart inside. An assortment of observations took place. Mama licked her lips like a cat, pecked the ground like a rooster, pivoted like a duck, her stockings down caught dust and dough balls, she cracked her mouth, glazed, caught one eyelash, rubbed her hands on her gorgeous gingham, her hands grasped sticky metal, intricate latchwork, opened to the room, smell cold mixed with bologna, rubber bands, crumpled wax paper bonnets, fat goose legs, and special jellies, ignited by the warmth of the room. The old fart smelled this through his important breather holes. Cleverly he dialed from within. From the outside we observed that the nose of the wooden mask, where the holes had just been a moment ago, was now smooth, amazingly blended, camouflaged in with the very intricate rainbow trout replica. The old fart inside was now breathing freely from his perfume bottle atomizer air bulb invention.
His excited eyes from within the dark interior glazed, watered in appreciation of his thoughtful preparation.
Oh man, it's so heavy.
Crocodile tears. means more than an autograph. A painting's more real than a photograph. To sum it up in less than one paragraph, let this then be my epitaph. I'm gonna beat on my guitar like an idiot. It's the only thing that makes sense to me. And I don't think that I'll ever fit in the 21st century. You see, I never learned the value of a dollar, but I've always known the value of a friend. A friend's someone you want to keep forever, and a dollar's just a paper that you spend. So I beat on my guitar like an idiot. It's the only thing that makes sense to me. And I don't think that I'll ever fit in the 21st century. My guitar like an idiot. It's the only thing that makes sense to me. And I don't think that I'll ever fit in the 21st century. So I beat on my guitar like an idiot. It's the only thing that makes sense to me. And man, I don't think that I'll ever fit in the 21st century.
Watt from Pedro show started off with this third hour with, sorry for the stumble bum talk, part six of Jack Flanders and Dreams India. And this peak here is going to get very schooled in Jack Flanders and tell us all about next time she's on. She'll give you her whole critique on the 37 years that they've been making them my movies. And followed that up with a cover of a Leonard Cohen song, Song of Isaac by Sam Duke. Then Cat Fight by Rumi. Do you know about Rumi?
Mm-mm.
Well, I don't know about this band, but Rumi was actually a poet, a Sufi poet from 600-700 years ago.
Oh.
A static, where like kind of a mystic Muslim thing where you drink it and stuff.
Yeah.
There's Buddha. Muslims, there's traditions.
Drink.
I know, but there's traditions of Buddhist poems, monks too, like this. They got buzzed and shit.
Whoa.
Yeah. Not always ascetic. What's his name? The drummer. Bennett Martin.
Mm-hmm.
Drummer friend of mine who became a Zen trip. Maybe a priest, I think, even. He told me there's certain monks they look up to from hundreds of years ago that were not the most sober people.
Yeah.
So they have it in their tradition, and even with Christians, you know, Trappist monks make the real strong Belgian beer.
Oh, right. Yeah, so. I heard about that.
So you know what I mean? Straight edge.
They didn't drink, no, did they?
I don't know. Maybe somebody.
Somebody got the taste.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. After that, we had Captain Beefheart with "Old Fart at Play," my theme song. And then Ashray with Crocodile Tears. That's had Mr. Shimmy. That's his band before me grew. I get to record with him next month. I'm looking forward to it much. I love Mr. Shimmy. Statement after that by Boris. Got to see them when I took that trip. I saw them in Atlanta.
Uh-huh.
I was driving around.
Okay.
And they're an intense band. That's a wild band.
Is it from there?
And it was weird. Yeah. I was at, no, they're not from Atlanta. They're Tokyo.
Oh, okay.
And I did a spiel with him. I don't know if you heard it, but it was on Watt from Pedro show. And I remember at the end of the thing, I asked him, "Well, do you have influences from the old days?
Mm-hmm.
Your old music, you know?" He goes, "No. Everything is imported." His name was Atsuo. Because he had the 70s thing, even though, you know, I had a couple of years on him, he knew the 70s.
Really?
But they're a great band. They're a great band. Some of that stuff, you know, I think when people take on kind of kitsch from another era or stuff, they're just little things. If they're good, if it's strong music, it's got its own identity, and those things are just little decorations. What do you call it? You call jewelry and shit. Accoutrements?
Japanese?
Accessorize?
Part?
No, like if you wear earring, it doesn't really change your face. It's just an accessory.
Okay.
And that's why I think sometimes when a band, hey, you know, we kind of like 60s or 70s or whatever era. It's just a little thing. I mean, unless they're really doing a, you know, Beatlemania thing or something.
Right.
It's just a little thing. Because if they got their own voice, that will come through. We had, Richie Hess with Beat on My Guitar Like an Idiot. Richie, the same night Dose is doing that experimental thing at 10:30 at 8 p.m. on April 27th, we're doing a memorial for Richie Hess, who, the cancer got him. He fought hard, but it's very sad. He was a very sweet man. And
sometimes it's a sad thing, you know, like some people live healthy all their lives and exercise and do the right things, but then cancer got them.
Yeah. He played with Joe Baez. He was the Vibes player in Saccharine Trust. And Joe was really surprised because actually Richie was doing good. He was rebounding, responding to the treatment, and then...
Sometimes it happens.
Just
that
whooped
way.
Up, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. In fact, it happened the day we played Safari Sam's with Carla.
Oh, really?
Remember?
Yeah, it was just a.
Evangelista?
2 weeks ago?
Yeah, somebody told me at the gig.
Right, wow.
Well, Joe Baez was there.
Yeah.
And he saw him the day before. So. That's why some people ask me, why do you play so intense? Why do you do gigs so intense? And that's one of the reasons.
I never asked you. I expected that.
I said some people. But because you don't know when your last gig is. So, God, how would you want it? I don't know if you're conscious of it, but you think back, my last gig, I just was halfway. I was just sleepwalking through it. No. You don't know when your number is up. That they say that, right?
It's also a saying, like, you know, you're as good as your last gig as well.
Yeah. I think that's important, even if you're not killed, this idea of resting on laurels. Like, I'll have people say to me, I hope it's not too self-important to say this, but you're a legend. But, you know, a lot of that's just circumstance. You know, I didn't get killed. I still think I have to be relevant. I have to be doing something in the now. I can't rest just on the past.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of that was D. Boone getting to play with that man.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it is kind of people. And there's weird things too. Here's another society encumberment. Notoriety. You know, this idea of celebrity and stuff.
Yeah.
Some people, right, they say some people are famous just for being famous.
There's plenty of them.
Yeah, what's that about?
Especially if people were born into a certain last name. They can't help it.
Yeah, well, that might be even a burden.
Well, that's, you know, it's not... It's just as much them as other people making them to be something else, and they kind of play upon that personality that people expect them to be. You know, because, like, we're talking about how... majority of people have to do things, journeyman, like we said, like you said, they just...
Well, I was using it negative, because journeyman can be positive.
Sure, yeah, I mean, if you...
In the old days, like with Masons,
yeah, so
there was apprentice, journeyman, and master, and journeyman was the middle.
Well, you kind of surrender yourself into the duty of what that is that you do, and you kind of do it without ego, and that's kind of what I... my impression of that conversation was. I think in this culture, Americans especially have this mundane sort of lifestyle that they, for lack of a better term, live curiously through other people's stardoms and idealized personalities, and that what spring out the necessity of making people into stars and celebrities.
Oh, yeah.
because they don't want to look at themselves.
Or maybe we don't have royalty, so that has become the royalty.
Yeah, exactly.
Thailand has a king, right?
Yeah.
And so the focus, the peoples can focus on that.
Kind of, yeah.
And you were telling me once about how the king's kind of a big deal in people's lives in Thailand,
yeah.
Right?
He's like a father to everyone. It's kind of...
They almost all know him. They all have a personal relationship.
Well, no, no.
In their minds.
In their minds, yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, it's like a whole different social fabric there where, you know, family unit is kind of the most important thing, I guess. And father and parents figure or grandparents are to be looked up on to this whole respect thing and in different, you know, you humble yourself by thinking of other people who have come before you.
Yeah.
And they kind of have more wisdom, so you kind of be modest at all times and do what you got to do. And
where's the king fit in?
Yeah, that's what the king is, like a ultimate symbol of, the father figure that look over the country and the country, the population of his children. So luckily, I always say this, that he happens to be cool. I mean, I can't say for anybody else before or maybe after, but this particular one, he, like, you know, he's into the arts and he's into music.
Probably every day there's news about him, right?
Well, has to be, yeah, I guess. Yeah. So yeah, but yeah.
And he was kind of involved with this coup a little bit.
Yeah, but that's kind of controversial, you know. I don't know the
bottom
of it.
Because it's a constitutional monarchy. He's supposed to kind of be outside.
Exactly, but once he does say something, people do listen. But he try not to say anything, because constitution does write down that he has no authority.
Yeah.
But he definitely has influence.
So, and he's a charismatic guy.
Yeah, and there are laws. You know, if you defame him, talk bad about him, you can get arrested.
Yeah.
There are laws against it. But people don't do it just out of this ultimate respect, like just love and respect, revere, hugely. So,
but is there a prince? Does he have a son?
Yeah, he does have a son. And
what's he like?
Is
he spoiled?
Will I get arrested for saying all this? But yeah, he's kind of like not... cool, in my opinion. So, yeah, so that's why I'm kind of like curious to see what happens.
He doesn't play
later.
He's not in a band.
No, if he's in a band, I might like him a little bit, but maybe
King's,
that's just my bias.
The King
opinion.
Supports arts.
Yeah, he does it. You know. He's a saxophone player. Although he's American.
Oh, he does play.
Yeah. He's an American citizen. He was born in Massachusetts or something.
And educated?
And educated in Oxford, England. Like a lot of people in that status. All the riches go to England for education. And yeah, he's known to throw some jazz jam in his palace. And I'm still kind of trying to find ways to get in on it somehow. But but I think it's too late. I don't know.
Does he live in a fancy pad?
Well, yeah. Yeah, he has his own army. It's the Royal Army. Like the England have, you know? That's surrounding.
Do they give tours of his pad?
No.
No.
Okay. But I don't
Buckingham
know.
Palace, they do.
I don't know. I never put in a request. Maybe there's like a Minister of Palace tour request. I don't know.
Okay, let's have some more music.
Thank you. Thinking, Johnny, 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 you have the life of Riley, but tomorrow I get up at 8 in the morning so I can chop onions and chop beef and make my rent, then I get 2 teeth out, and then, God willing, 20 Percocets, so I can sleep through the rest of the weekend. You know something? I could get 120 Percocets if I had a goddamn record deal and it was like Elvis, and then I could drop dead big and fat at 42, but in the meantime, could you spare me, like, 60 cents for the subway, maybe? At least I'm
Big in Boston, yeah, we're big in Boston.
Way up, 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 way up kill all of her die in the morning.
From Pedro Show. Started that off with that chunk of music, I should say. Raspberry Cotton by Joseph D'Arcy. And then we heard Melt Me by Black Moth Super Rainbow. Then Big in Boston by Johnny and the Blackjacks. Something from the middle of the 80s, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And then Drunken Sailor by the Booze Beggars. And then HMS Unable by Shinjinrui. But they're an England band. HMS, I think, stands for either His Majesty's Ship or Her Majesty's Ship.
Yeah. If they're from England, it's Her Majesty, yeah?
Huh?
If they're from England, then it's Her Majesty.
Wouldn't Not it? If a king is in... right now, probably, because Elizabeth. But
yeah.
It, Harry, who's the one who's supposed to... Willie?
I don't know.
One of those guys supposed to get on.
John. George.
No, it's either Willie or Harry, right?
Oh, the kids.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because Charles can't be...
Why?
I don't think he wants to.
Oh.
His ma's still alive, for one thing. I think the one has to die before.
And he's like, Charles is getting
you
up there.
You come from a king culture with that tie thing. I didn't know he jammed on the sax. That's wild.
Yeah. I don't know he jams, but he plays.
Okay. And last one there was Musical Electricity by Howard Am, who was a guest on the show. I was telling Peek, first time I was... Well, not first time, because Jack Brewer solicited himself many times. But, yeah, I want to be a guest on the Watt from Pedro show.
Yeah.
You had a brush with notoriety because...
What?
What were you saying? You were on the Wilco bus?
No. Wilco did a 5-day run in Chicago last February, and I went there, and... the monitor guy, he kind of, when he greeted me, and he's like, hey, I heard you on Watt's show.
I played, Wilco, the boss, used to have a band called
Uncle Tupelo yeah.
And I played with them when I was playing with Firehose.
Oh, really?
I think early 90s.
Okay.
They were from St. Louis.
Okay.
And they kind of reminded me a little of the Meat Puppets.
Okay.
Who I got to see, by the way.
Like recently? A
couple weeks ago, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, Kurt was playing. They all were playing great.
Where was this?
The Glass House, Pomona.
Oh, Pomona. You went all the way there.
Well, I was asked to go to take a pic because I did an interview with Chris Kirkwood, the bass player.
Okay.
Who's doing really well now. But I got to see him play. I mean, I've loved those guys for years. And
uh-huh.
God, Kurt was tearing it up on guitar. Couldn't really hear Chris, the sound man. They were opening for Built to Spill. I got to talk with Doug. I hadn't spoke with him in a while.
Mm-hmm.
That was great. The Meat Puppets, you know, them and Saccharin are like the only bands from the old days.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody called me about, they're writing a book on Husker Du, and I got to talk about Huskers.
Huh.
Grant's in on it, so it's not like an unauthorized thing.
But
I don't think Bob's part of it. Bob and Grant will ever. They will. But yeah, guys from the old days. Do you see that thing going around? The timeline of the Black Flag members and all the haircuts?
No.
I gotta send that to you. It's hilarious.
Yes, please do.
I mean, you don't want to get too stirred up in the old days, but...
But, you know, you look at it
remember.
As a...
It was a tight crew in those days.
Yeah.
Had to be.
Look at overall pictures. It's still interesting.
Well, that's the April 13th, 2008 edition of the Watt from Pedro show. Thank you, Ms. Peek, for coming aboard.
You're welcome.
And see you folks when I get back. I have a show next week. Brother Matt will tell everybody about his trip to Mexico.
I might crush that one, too.
Yeah. You'll be asked. Aboard. Okay, keep your powder dry.
Bye.